Line, Congressman Don Manzullo on the line. Congressman, good morning to you.
How are you doing?
We're doing fine, sir. How's everything this morning?
Well, everything in Washington's terrible.
All right, well, good talking to you, sir.
The best thing that happened to the American people was last February when 55 inches of snow hit Washington, D.C. in 7 days and closed Congress for a week. It was 1 week without new regulations, new taxes, and new spending.
Well, Congressman, I know there's some health care news we'll get to here in a little bit, but off the top, I want to ask for your reaction to the president's speech last night. It appears in most quarters it's getting panned for lack of details, lack of focus. What's your take on the president's speech last night?
I was down in New Orleans about 6 weeks ago, which was the second week into the spill. It was our annual meeting of the U.S.-Canadian Interparliamentary Exchange, and we just happened to be in New Orleans for the event and went on board a Coast Guard plane and flew over the area where the explosion had occurred and 11 men lost their lives. And it was apparent then that this thing was mammoth. And when you look at the size of the spill even back then and the number of people that were out there, you know, it doesn't take too much to figure out that you've got a mammoth spill and you need to bring every resource possible in there to stop the leak and contain it. But the problem with the president's speech last night is he thinks that he can cap this gushing well with legislation. Cap and trade, raise taxes on American people. By making gasoline more expensive, he thinks that people will use less gasoline, and you know that's one argument. It's crazy. That'll cost 3 million jobs in itself. But American people want to know how you're going to stop that leak, and what are you going to do to help out the people?
Mm-hmm. I think people were expecting a little more detail on how the leak's being addressed, what's the next step, but instead they got a speech outlining legislation that he's going to hope to push through before his party gets voted out of power in November.
Well, and then instead of sending people down to the Gulf to help clean up, he sends a bunch of lawyers. I mean, this is...
And a new commission, too.
Yeah, a new commission.
And a new commission. And you just reach a certain point where stop the dang leak. Concentrate on that. And instead he's concentrating on, sure, BP's at fault, and sure, the CEO is a first-class jerk. You know, we all know that. I mean, by what the guy said and everything... but what you want to do is stop the leak, and you want to keep BP in business so they can pay the billions of dollars in claims. And we're sitting here thinking, you know, well, he wants to put BP in bankruptcy so he could get somebody in control and write the checks. Well, who's going to be in control? No one's in control now. When I was down there, there were about 7 or 8 members of Congress, and we were taken to always a place about an hour outside of New Orleans. It was a Shell nerve center that they had rented or given to BP for the cleanup. And there were so many agencies down there. And I said, who's in control? And we were told it was the Department of Homeland Security. I figured, oh, that's great. What do they know about oil?
Yeah.
And when I asked the question, the question should have been not who's in control of the government units, but who's in control of stopping this leak. And we were briefed at that time by BP, and I'm not defending BP, but the guy who briefed us says it could be 5,000 barrels, it could be 10,000 barrels. He said, we don't know how much oil is coming out of that hole. And I mean, that's what we were told, and that's been BP's position. Again, I'm not defending BP. We're trying to get that hole stopped, and the only one that can stop it is BP using one technology after the other. But it's just very, very frustrating. It reminds me of what happened after 9/11. 9/11 occurred, and I got a call from Senator Jerry Grafstein in Canada, and a very good friend of mine, a member of the House of Lords. And he said, Don, he said, the Canadian people want to help. He said, I've tried calling here and there and this and that. We've got, you know, we've got teams, et cetera, we can send down. No one gets any answers. And in fact, there was an offer from the Saudis and I believe the Dutch to bring in their ships, their skimmer ships, along with their crew, And to get over there, you know, it could take a week or so in order to get to the spot. They got no response. And then the response, unfortunately, is that, well, you know, you might violate the Jones Act, which requires all ships in American seas to be made in America and to be manned by American sailors. I'll tell you guys, this is unbelievable.
Congressman,
American crew.
I got to ask you about something else that was mentioned during the speech, and that was the thing that literally jumped out at me, and I'm certain it did with you as well. The president just came out and said it. The reason that we're drilling out there in a mile of water and all that is because we've run out of places to drill on land and in shallow seas.
That's just absolutely absurd.
Okay, good.
I used
a different word.
Anwar is sitting, the best place to drill is Anwar. It's the middle of nowhere. You can't see what's going on. You don't have to worry about anything breaking with this type of a spill. And no. Well, you can't do there. Well, then the same people that object to Anwar say, well, we can't have those rigs a mile offshore. You know, that's too close. We can see them. So they kept on pushing them further and further out to sea. And the further you go out to sea, the deeper the drill, and the deeper the drill, the more dangerous and more luminous the opportunities to have a disaster such as this that occurred. But, I mean, it's just...
But don't you believe making a statement like that basically pops the whole balloon in anything that you're trying to get across when you make that big, a bold statement like that that is so verifiably untrue? Doesn't that taint the whole idea of what you got going on?
I don't think it's a matter of being untrue. I don't think he understands.
Well, that's even more painful to think of.
Well, it is. It is. The American people want that, and everybody wants that hole plugged. And they want to know what can be done in order to remediate those beaches and keep those people from any more disaster. And now there's a full ban now on oil exploratory going on, even in shallow waters compared to what's going on there. There are 100,000 people out of work right now in the Gulf. I mean,
who don't need to be out of work.
They don't need to be out of work because the rigs that they were working on were safe rigs. And the problem is, if this moratorium continues, those rigs will end up going down to South America or other waters because there are only so many rigs in the world. These rigs are extraordinarily expensive, and if they're not being used, I mean, the rent is somewhere between $1 and $2 million a day to rent them. The owners of those rigs would just take them elsewhere where there's demand. So, I mean, we can have clean, safe drilling if it's done on land. That's the best place to do it. If you explore the shales that are in the Dakotas and in Alberta. If we use all the above, what I call every alternative type of energy that's out there, ethanol, you know, that's one way to use less petroleum. But to think about, if you stopped offshore drilling in this country and stopped getting oil from 3,300 rigs that are out there, you're going to lose about 30% capacity. We'll become even more dependent on foreign countries. Even at a point when Saudi Arabia at times is at 100% production, gasoline will go to $10-$12 a gallon. I mean, the country and the world will be pushed into a worldwide depression. That's how important it is to get that leak under control and to start the remediation.
Congressman Don Manzullo joining us here on Straight Talk for another couple of minutes here on WROK. Wanted to also shift gears here to health care. Because there was a vote in the House yesterday, correct me if I'm wrong, on a possible repeal of the individual mandate, which failed. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, it was a procedural vote. When you're not in the majority, then you have to use procedural votes to try to get out your message. And what we tried to say is, the individual mandates are not working. The report has just came out yesterday that up to 70% of Americans will lose their insurance through work. And there's nothing in that new health care bill that can curb costs of the policy. So what you have are all these mandates that undoubtedly will make the policy more expensive, and Americans are going to be paying through the nose for health care insurance that may be a little bit have a little bit more coverage than what they presently have. It just every promise that was made in that health care bill is not being fulfilled because we knew it couldn't.
Well, the president's also now calling for a vote on what the doc fix for Medicare, but not having the doc fix was one of the ways that they claimed it was going to be able to actually save money over the long haul, and now he's calling for the doc fix, which will actually cost more.
Well, there are two doc fixes that are going on. Over the years, there's been, several years ago, Congress passed a law that said there should be cutbacks on a periodic scale in order to keep enough money into the Medicare trust fund to keep it from going bust. But every time the cut was supposed to come, the doctors lobbied to delay the cuts. They said, "Oh, you can't have these cuts, even though they're 2 and 3%, because there'd be a lot less money coming in." So all the cuts got delayed, and now you're at the point where it'd be a 20% cut in reimbursement to Medicare. It's $20 billion behind, but guess what? The health care bill is $600 billion in new health care cuts. New Medicare cuts on top of the, not $20 billion, $200 billion that the government's already behind on giving to the doctors. That's what happens when you pass these massive pieces of legislation that have all these mandates that are not funded or offset by other parts of the budget. I mean, it's pure disaster that's on the way, and the biggest problem is, I saw an article yesterday in the Washington Post, one of the biggest problems is the number of doctors over 55 that are leaving.
Mm-hmm.
They're just leaving. They're just leaving their professions. They're saying, this is not worth it. You know, we're supposed to be providers of health care, not the super accountants trying to wring out whatever money is left in order for us just to make our bills.
You may disagree, but I know you do have friends on the other side of the aisle. When you talk to them, do you think that they fully comprehend how unpopular this health care bill is and how it might impact them at the polls in November?
Well, most of them didn't have town hall meetings this past summer. I don't know how many we had on health care. I think it ended up 8 or 9 or 10. I lost count of them. Then we went out with this America Speaks. We had three town hall meetings over the Memorial Day break, and I think we got another 7 or 8 set up over the 4th of July break, and probably, who knows, 10, 15, or 20, or even more set up during the August break, just going out there and meeting with the people. I mean, the people have been very, very clear. They don't want this health care bill because they know it's a disaster. And I can't believe that the people I represent are that much different than people in areas that are represented by a Democratic member of Congress. They're hearing the same thing we are.
And we're hearing it as well when we open up the phones. Congressman, unfortunately, we know you're quite busy. We're up against the clock as well. Thanks for the availability. We always appreciate the fact that we give you a call and you're ready to go.
You bet. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Congressman Don.